2. Let me give it to you. Listen to me. Just listen to me for a second as I introduce this. This won't take long tonight. A virtue. Now listen, a virtue. The Bible talks about a virtuous woman, does it not? A virtue. A virtue is a moral standard that a society or somebody holds to. In other words, a society puts a premium on that. It's a virtue. It's something to aspire to. That's what a virtue is. I believe that we have a society that holds very little virtues anymore. Used to be a virtue in America to be a hardworking man. I get these magazines called Reminisce. I've told you about them. They're about old people magazines, really what they are. They're people that I'm surprised they all don't come in just large print. But just read about a lady who had written in, and they're called Reminisce, and they're just interesting as can be. Mom used to, when we traveled, my mom, I guess probably one of the reasons why I'm a reader, is when we used to travel many hours in the vehicle, my mom used to take these magazines and read articles. We'd just sit there and listen to them while we traveled. And in this one article, this lady was talking about living through the Great Depression. And she talked about how her dad was a Methodist preacher, and they had a parsonage next to the church. And they lived not too far from railroad tracks. Now, if you put the Great Depression and a parsonage next to a church and railroad tracks together, you naturally got hobos. You just naturally got hobos. And she made the mention, people thought that hobos, you know, we had these hobo parties, and we used to have them where you dressed up, you know, all poor or whatever else. She says the truth about it is she can't ever remember a hobo that came to the house that asked for food, that never, ever asked for food before he offered to work. Do you have some things that I can do for a sandwich? And I'm thinking, you know what? I'm going to take this article and I'm going to drive to downtown Cincinnati and to those guys that are standing on the exits. You know? And I have had here, and we used to have quite a few over at Central too, but I have had here. I've had, it's very rare, and majority of the time, people just come in and they want money. They don't even come in hardly anymore. I mean, they still do come in. But amazingly, people just call nowadays. They're too lazy to come in. You know, could you send me some money? You know, and I'm thinking, you know. And then when I tell them, when I ask them, you know, well, what did your church say when you asked your church? Well, I don't have a church. And I say, well, you think that might be a good place to start? Some of them get mad at me. Well, I didn't call to be preached to. Well, you're a beggar. Quit being a chooser. Anyway, that's my thoughts. You know, so, but anyway. People have come in. We have had some people come in. They'll say, you know, you got some windows I can clean. You got something I can do. And it used to be our society used to have virtues like that. Virtues like that. How do we know that? Because people left their cars unlocked. People left their houses unlocked. I remember I went to preach for David Locke one time, and he was gone when I was in Bible college. And some family in church told us, they says, well, we're going to go by the store, and we're having you over for dinner. You just go down this road, and you take a left. And I had, Brittany was born yet. You and your girls come over, and when you get down here, now the last part is a dirt road. And when you get down there, it's kind of a house. And the door's open, go on in. The door was not just open. It was standing open. And when Tammy and I pulled up there, I remember thinking, Tammy and I go, didn't they say they were going by the store? Well, maybe they beat us here, but we didn't see any car. And we walked in, and the door is literally standing wide open. And we walked into the house. The guy has a bearskin rug on the floor. He has his house. And I asked him later when they got home, I said, don't y'all lock it? Well, no, why would we do that? Don't know. I don't know. I'm living in Dallas, you know. Anyway, so the virtues, and sad to say, virtues become absorbed and embraced within a society, and they become stronger when they're greatly embraced because they're considered to be the norm. When a society changes, it's what it considers virtues change. You hear me? As a society changes, what it considers virtues change. Today, to be a Christian and to be strong, what was once a good virtue, if you don't believe me, go back and study the Scopes trial. You all know what I'm talking about, the monkey trial, whenever creation was on trial. And, you know, it was about America being taken by the scientists against God. It was a virtue to get up and say, people applauded in that case, people applauded when William Jennings Bryan got up and said, we can't have evolution in our schools because we didn't come from monkey. Genesis 1 settles the matter. And the courthouse erupted with applause. Because why? That was the virtue. That was the embracing of the society during the time. Nowadays, you know what is embraced? Tolerance. Ecology. Right? Ecology. Some people said, you all know that Al Gore and Tipper Gore are separating, don't you? Some people said you might believe in global warming, but we know there are some places that were pretty cold. Yeah. I remember Tipper Gore being pro-life, and she's the one that led the crusade to put explicit lyric warnings on labels years ago. Yeah, on CDs. Things change, don't they? Because why? Virtues change. Virtues change. You remember 1948? And some of you don't. A song came out. Remember? Here's the title of it. Baby, It's Cold Outside. You heard that song? Well, the guy's trying to talk her into staying, right? I mean, it's a pretty typical guy-girl thing. You know, why don't you stick around? I can't stick around. Why? Conversation goes back and forth, and he said, my father will be pacing the floor. My mother will start to worry. The neighbors might start to think something. My sister will be suspicious. My brother will show up at the door. There will be plenty of talk tomorrow. I can't stay. Baby, it's cold outside. What am I going to do about all this? Nowadays, come on. Let's compare that song with the songs of today. Yeah, what a joke that is. Most of the world, and in fact, in much of the Muslim and other countries, Oriental countries, they have coined a sociological phrase. I don't know if you've heard this, but this is one that's come out here and there. It's called Westoxification. Now, just put toxification and put West in front of it. Westoxification. You know what that means? They believe that the toxic stuff that comes, like, and they cite, many of them, things like Baywatch and these programs of America have infiltrated much of the rest of the world, and in their opinion, it has been toxic and garbage and not helped. It's called Westoxification, the negative influence of America on the rest of the world. There's something to that. If you'll study it out. You and I live in a society whose virtues have changed and are changing. But that is an opportunity, and I'm afraid most Christians, and especially Christian women, do not see it that way. And here's this. If the virtues of America's society have changed, this is an opportunity for you to show how superior the virtues of Christianity are in light of the changes of America. You know what that means? It's a greater opportunity for you to be a Christian lady. You're going to stand out more. than you ever did before. When everybody dressed modestly, when everybody dressed and talked decently, well, guess what? A Christian lady was fit right in America. But nowadays, a Christian lady will stand out, won't she? Yeah, she will. So the opportunity for us to rise to the virtues, because listen to this. Remember I said a virtue is a moral standard which a society holds to. And here's what I hear from most, especially girls and young girls. Are you ready? Well, these people and those people. All right? Now, if you're not a Christian, then you can get your standard from TV and from school and your friends. You can. Where else are you going to get them? You're going to stand in your mirror and you'll come up, I like this. This is the way my mom dresses. This is the way everybody else dresses. You're going to get your virtues from your society. But what amazes me is I hear Christians who claim to belong to the kingdom of God, a whole different society. You hear me? We draw our measures of modesty and virtues from this society instead of from the Bible. Whenever I talk to, especially girls, because when it comes to modesty, the issues are more with girls. But guys today are still starting to look stupid, I think. But when I talk to them, here's the main thing I ask. Hey, you know, she goes, I don't agree with that. You don't have to agree with it, unless you're a Christian. Well, I'm a Christian. How dare you say I'm not a Christian? Well, I showed you from the Bible. And you call yourself a Christian. So, well, I am a Christian. Well, you don't love God. And people get upset when you tell them they don't love God. But here's the truth about it. If it says it right here in the Bible, you're to adhere to it. Correct? Christians adhere to the Word of God. And let me put in the words of Jesus. If you really do love me, I'm adding the really do part. If you love me, you will what? You'll keep my commandments. So don't tell me, here, let me put it in the reverse, the inverted form. Don't tell me you love me and call yourself a Christian if you don't obey what I say. And here's the truth about it. I ask most girls, they say, well, I don't think that's a problem. I don't think that's an issue. I'll say, well, did you check it out in the Bible? No. You didn't bother to see what the Bible says about it? No. You call yourself a Christian? Yes. Well, then what manual, where did you get your clues? Where did you get them? I got them from my family. I got them from well, okay. If you were living according to the virtues of America, if you're going to say, I want to be an American, I want to look like an American, and everything about me wants to be red, white, and blue American girls off of TV, off of the school kids, then if that is where you get your values, if that is your virtue ideal of living, then okay. But if you're going to call yourself a Christian, now you've got a problem. That's not where you get your clues. That's not where you draw your virtue. It amazes me, though, that I can find so many people that call themselves a Christian that don't feel that the things found in the Word of God are all that true. Let me walk through this very quickly. Number one, modesty. Are you ready? Modesty reflects virtue. Your modesty reflects the virtue. What is virtue? The moral standard that you hold. Your modesty reflects your virtue. And that doesn't surprise you. That should click with you. Because a prostitute dressed like a prostitute, what would you say? Well, there goes a virtuous woman. No, you wouldn't. Right. Because why? Her modesty or immodesty reflects her lack of virtue, right? If that's true, the flip side is true as well, isn't it? And I have a lot of people say, well, just because I may wear clothes that you don't think are appropriate doesn't mean that I'm not a modest person. Amazes me that people want to take it outside that realm. What gives you the right to do that? You know, the Bible makes it very clear that clothes do indeed reflect your modesty. Who says they don't? I'll give you some examples. Judah and Tamar is one of the first instances in the Bible where a person put on clothing and it was shown to have meaning. She tricked him into immorality, if you will. She by her lack of virtue, her clothing showed her lack of modesty. Joab had a woman dress in sackcloth to come see David to try to change his mind about Absalom and to cheer David up. Listen, she used clothing in a deceitful way to accomplish something. Esther, I'm going to give you a positive one. Esther, on the other hand, a virtuous woman, when she made a decision to go before the king, the Bible makes it very clear that Esther went and dressed in her royal robes and appropriately put herself together so she could go before the king. Yes, clothes do make a difference. The priests in the book of Ezra were told to carry out their ministry, and it was identified by their clothes. Back in the book of Esther, Mordecai got to be paraded down the street. And guess what was the distinguishing thing about Mordecai, which just grated Haman more than anything else, is that he got to wear the king's clothes. So modesty does reflect your virtue. I'm going to get into this. Your clothing, your outward appearance reflects what you think. Well, what is virtue? Your moral standard that you hold. Your moral standard. Your clothing reflects that. But here's the truth about it. You say, well, okay, so you're making an issue on the outside. No, because the truth is the way you dress and look on the outside is a reflection of your attitude towards God on the inside. See, modesty is a true reflection of your inner self. There are two words that are reflected in the Greek that are translated from modest. And they're not always translated modest. In 1 Timothy chapter 2, verse 9, believe it or not, we find both Greek words that deal with modesty. Both of them are in this verse. Let me give you verse 8, 9, and 10. Let me get the context. So go back to 1 Timothy chapter 2, verse 8. Are you there? Everybody with me? You didn't close your Bibles or anything, did you? All right, real quick, like. I will therefore that men pray everywhere, lifting up holy hands without wrath and doubting. That's men. In like manner, also, that women adorn themselves in what kind of apparel? Modest. You say, you shouldn't dwell on clothing. Well, somebody should have told Paul. I got news for you. If Paul had preached this today in a Baptist church, some woman would have given him down the road. All you're concerned about is women's clothes. He said, modest apparel. With what? Shamefacedness. You know what that word is? That's the other word for modesty. Shamefacedness and sobriety with broided hair or gold or pearls or costly array. Verse 10. Now get the principle here. But which becometh women professing what? Godliness with good works. Now the attitude in verse 10 is reflected in verse 9, and it gets specific. But the truth about it is, women that profess godliness and let it flow from the inside and out aren't going to have a problem with verse 9. These things aren't going to be an issue. This is talking about two different things. One of these is talking about modesty in attitude and modesty in dress. The one says modest apparel. That is talking about modesty in dress, obviously. Shamefacedness is talking about modesty in the mind. What do we mean by modesty in the mind? Jack Benny said, many of you remember him, Jack Benny said, modesty is my best quality. You know, and the ideal is, you ever met someone that's not very modest? You know, it's and that's what we're talking about. Someone that isn't very modest. When we think of the virtue, we're talking about that standard that is held within your heart that brings itself out. The question is modesty a virtue to you? Is modesty a virtue to you? In other words, let's talk about modesty of the mind, all right? Let's talk modesty and attitude. Let's just say that I give Derek an opportunity, and I'm going to say, Derek, why don't you come up here and share a few words? So Derek comes up here, good-looking guy that he is. Derek begins to tell everyone how that he finished his first year at UC, and, you know, he's pretty popular. He's a good-looking guy. Girls are always looking at him while he's down there, you know, and he's really risen to the top, and he's pretty popular, and he really expects that maybe someday he'll be the president, and he'll, you know, Derek just begins to tell us how great he is. And you're going to say, why? Yeah, that kid needs a dose of some humility, doesn't he? You know, nobody's going to accuse him of being very modest, you know. Then there's this false humility, this false modesty. You've seen that. I know people, you know. Why don't you come up here and sing for us? Oh, I can't sing. I can't sing. Oh, don't. Quit. Go on. I can't sing. Are you sure? You really want me to come sing? You know, I'm really not that good of a singer. Oh, come on, we really like for you to sing. Oh, well, I don't know. And I get up here and they say, well, I can't really sing very well, but for the glory of God, but I brought 5 CDs with me. I got a cartoon somewhere in my files of some guy standing there, and he says, I really don't care, it's in church, right? He says, I really don't care much for this song, but it makes for a wonderful showcase for my voice. Why do you sing that song? Because I sound good. We do play those games even in church. It does happen even in church, sad to say. The inner self. Modesty, if your modesty is influenced by the context that you live in, let's say you're a young girl, if your ideals of modesty are influenced by your context of what goes on in your high school, then here's the thing about it. Your ideals of modesty are always in a state of flux. You know what that means? What you think is okay now, you'll come up with a whole different thing a year from now. Who would have ever, beyond the wildest dreams, think that guys would actually walk around in such a way that they couldn't keep their pants up? I thought platform shoes were, you know, that came and went. That's kind of ugly, you know, platform shoes. I used to have bell sleeves. Anybody remember bell sleeves? I used to wear those little Dickie, the turtlenecks. You remember that? Lime green, you know. Yeah. I used to wear some really cool stuff. And then we went through this other thing where you would wear like a checkered shirt with one of those like sock-like ties that was squared at the bottom. You know, those were really cool. You remember those styles? Remember? You still got them? Hang on, Tim. They'll go around. They'll go around. I remember a time when white belts and white shoes were in style. Leisure suits. Remember leisure suits? Remember those sort of things? You know, all of those things, you're going to say, well, those are kind of goofy and those were kind of odd. They were. But none of them had anything to do with not being able to walk around without holding up your pants. Who would have thought, now listen, who would have thought that a prison fad would make mainstream America? In case if you don't know that, the baggy pants or the pants below the rear end is part of homosexual dialogue. It was a way of homosexual guys in prison advertising to the other guys. And it came into the street, and now it's the cool thing to do. And I'm watching these guys, and they can't even walk. They can't even walk. And then I'll notice, you can't help but notice, it's because since their underwear is showing, now they're wearing 2 or 3 pairs of underwear. Yeah, you know, they wear underwear, then shorts, then their jeans, and they're now in here. You know, I'm thinking, you know, I honestly believe, I used to think that certain things would never catch on, certain fads would never go that far. I'm beyond that now. I believe anything can be a fad, don't you? Yeah, I believe anything could be a fad. I mean, we've had leg warmers. I mean, why not go back to those sort of things? Believe it or not, now listen to me. Immodesty, and here's the next point. Your modesty reflects your virtue. Your virtue reflects who you really are. It really does. If you want to look like a sleaze, then that's the kind of virtuous person you are. See, there's not anybody that gets up in the morning with most people I know and actually goes to the closet and takes their arm and twists it until they put on those clothes. I didn't want to look this sleazy today, but somebody made me. Why are you dressed that way? You made a choice. Your choices come out of what? They come out of who you are. They come out of who you are. It reflects your inner self. And here's the truth about it. Here's the next point. Immodesty is a form of pride. It's a form of pride. What do you mean by that? To be immodest is to call attention to yourself. Look at me. Look what I've got. Look what I can show you. Hey, look at me. I didn't get enough attention today. Let me look at this. And don't tell me it doesn't happen. Don't tell me. Women are fantastic manipulators of themselves. They know when they can walk in. You see it on some TV programs. The detective, the female detectives, I can get that information out of him. No, you can't. I've already drilled him. He won't talk. She unbuttons a button. I'll get it out of him. And she walks in. You say, well, that's TV. Don't tell me that doesn't happen in the office. Don't tell me that that's not reality. Women know that. You're going to say, well, men should be responsible. Yeah, they should be responsible, and I agree. I'm all for men being accountable for their own actions, taking their own thoughts captive. But the ideal that the ideal is totally isolated is very ridiculous argument, and you hear that all the time, because basically what it is women don't want to take accountability for themselves, and so they use that to throw it back upon the man. And it's not an either-or situation. It's a both-and. Yes, he's responsible, but so are you. You're both responsible. And if you set it up, then you have become a stumbling block for that person. You've become a stumbling block for that person. You want to show yourself off. You want to get attention for yourself. Now, there are times, understand, there are times when we need to have attention, right? In fact, I did up here. Hey, up here. You know, look up here. Listen to me. I'm on for the attention. But that attention is coming from the right area of this is what I'm supposed to be doing, right? If you're gonna yell fire, hey, fire, everyone get out, that's a virtuous ideal of bringing attention to yourself because you're trying to get everyone else out. A lady that says, look at me, because I'm well-built and I dress that way, she is drawing attention to herself contrary to the way God wants it to be. Now, here's what he wants. He wants us to be able to look over at every young lady and every young man and say this, there's a good-looking, well-groomed, there's an attractive person. Has it ever dawned on anybody, have you ever thought about it, that even ugly people can be attractive as long as they're neat and groomed and take care of themselves? It's true. Even ugly people can be attractive. It is true. It is true. And unless that idea seems to be that funny, my Bible pretty well, let me, I don't know as much Hebrew as I do Greek, But in Isaiah chapter 53, verse 2, you need to know something about Jesus. He was not attractive. He wasn't attractive at all. The verses that talk about Jesus, man, I don't think that there was anything that would put Jesus on the front of a magazine. He would not have been a GQ. Now, you know what I believe? Here's what I believe. Because he knew what the purpose of himself and his body and modesty and virtue, because he had all that in balance, I believe Jesus took care of himself. I believe he was clean. I believe he bathed. I believe he did everything that would have been necessary to take care of himself. Do I think he was a good-looking person? No, the Bible tells me quite the opposite. He was not. People need to be immodest because they have a form of pride or insecurity. Now, let me go on, and then I'm going to go to the next point. In verse 10 of our passage, your modesty comes out of a good understanding of who you are. If you are secure with who you are, you won't have to do ridiculous things to get attention. Now, any of you ever taught school? Ever been around little kids? Right? You will find that the kid that isn't doing well, doesn't feel good about himself on a test, these insecure kids are usually the ones doing stupid things to get your attention. Am I right? Why is he doing that? He just wants his attention. He just wants your attention. Why? Because for some reason, he needs the teacher's attention. Why does he need the teacher's attention? There's an insecurity in that child that he needs constant confirmation. And as a teacher, you learn all these sort of things. I remember dealing with my teachers about it. You do things like you put the kid in a good place. When you go by, you're constantly touching them on the shoulder. Otherwise, they'll be disruptive. You know why they'll be disruptive? Because they need attention. They will do something to get attention. The truth about it is, whenever you see these, I think whenever you go to the mall and you see these young girls with these low-cut tops and their bellies hanging out and these short skirts or tight everything that reveals it all, you need to realize with the breakdown of the home, it is girls crying out for what is natural for a girl, and that is some man's attention. And they should be getting attention, and the first attention they should get, which brings their security, is good, healthy attention from the man in their life, which should be their father. Once they have that understanding, there's a great book that fills this out. It's a Christian book. It's called Always Daddy's Girl. I've recommended it before. I highly recommend it still. If you are a man and you have a daughter, if you're a mother and you need this understanding, what's the tension between father and girls? Always daddy's girl. This girl has been raised. And how are girls built? Girls are built to be a what? A help meet for some man. Are they not? And so therefore, if they do not get the confirmation of their father in a good relationship with the male of their life, you rest assured, they will. It is natural. It's the design. They will seek some kind of confirmation because of their lack of security somewhere else. And when you live in a society that doesn't hold up virtues anymore, you find instead we take girls and we give them this blank idea of investigate for yourselves. They become promiscuous. They become pregnant. They become in multi-relationships. And if you would just be surprised, you would be amazed if you were to look at the statistics of how many young girls are pregnant out of wedlock. And they just did a survey released last week of how many young girls think it's okay to get pregnant while you're still in high school. If you only knew, really, it's not out there for publication. It's not something we talk about. How many, by the time a girl graduates from a four-year college degree, over 50% of the girls in America have some kind of a sexual disease. You say, well, why is it so easy to track? Why girls? Why are you dealing with girls? it's easier to track. You have to, girls have to come in, they have to be, see doctors, they have to do all that. So it's, I got a feeling it's probably no different for the guys. So what about the security? See, our culture rejects the God who determines a person's value, more than the virtue that society puts on there. There is a virtue, unless we understand that our virtue comes out of the modesty of God's standards, then we're going to be constantly looking for those things. Modesty, let me give you a couple last ones. This is pretty abstract. I know it's pretty abstract, but modesty is not something that I can just come up with a list for. I could tell you today that I don't think baggy pants are appropriate. If I'd have said that 10 years ago, you'd go, huh? Because these rims of modesty will always be changing. These rims of modesty. I love it. I love it. A few years ago, we went. It became very stylish for all guys to have short hair. I remember when I was at school at Central, we had a Christian school, we weren't fighting the guys about hair. Oh, what a relief that was. We weren't fighting the guys about hair. I love it when trends go the right way. I do. But when trends go the wrong way, people don't care. Modesty will enhance your witness. Immodesty ruins your witness. You have no witness. Hello, I'm a prostitute. I'd like to tell you about Jesus. Yeah, right. Now, if you say you were a former prostitute, God changed your life. Reminds me of a girl. Many of you may know of her. She replaced Lauren Hutton. Her name is Kim Alexis. She was a supermodel. She won Miss Something somewhere in the 1980s. She's got her own website. She's really popular. She's on Vogue. And she was one of the main featured ones in the Swimsuit Sports Illustrated magazine one year. She was the main chick. Kim Alexis, January 21st, 1991, Kim Alexis gave her life to Christ. Now Kim Alexis speaks to women. Let me give you some of the things she says to women. Many women are playing with fire in the way they dress. Dressing like a floozy tells the world, look at me. Want me, lust after me. I'm easy. Somebody can have me. Displaying the intimate parts of the body is a form of advertising for sex. Let me give you another quote. Dressing modestly tells the world, I respect myself. I expect you to respect me. And I have some reason that I deserve to be respected. That is good. She says, it is possible to be stylish and attractive without wearing something that is too short, low cut, or see-through. She has made every effort to eliminate as much as she can on the internet and wherever she can the pictures of her from her past life. But they were published in the Sports Illustrated. They were in magazines. She'll never do it. She lives with this knowledge that I treated my body for myself selfishly, and I slapped my Creator in the face by letting this precious thing that He made, a woman, a female that He designed, to be nothing but a sex object for attention, for my ego, and for men. And even now today, this is 20 years later, even now today, she lives with the fact that there are men out there Googling over her from 20 to 30 years ago with all the wrong thoughts. If you go to her website, she has a website where she talks about makeup and different things. There's not one swimsuit. There's not one low-cut blouse. There is nothing immodest in all of her sites. Modesty undermines Satan's work. To behave immodestly is to entice others towards sin. It provides envy, it lures towards lust, and it can keep others from encountering God. 2 Peter chapter 2, verse 18 says this, "For when they speak great swelling words of vanity, they allure through the lusts of the flesh." Of the what? Of the flesh. You know, I wish there wasn't lust of the flesh, don't you? And I got a feeling there probably are going to be lust of the flesh as long as we're what? As long as we're in the flesh. As long as we're in this body, there will be lust of the flesh. "Through much wantonness, those that were clean escaped from them who live in error." This is talking about people who are deliberately trying to deceive people. One of the ways they do this is by immodest behavior, boastful words, and appealing to lustful desires. Part of the struggle for us as a Christian group of people whose virtues we get from a total different world than this world is the problem is we live in this world. And you and I understand that your value is not on how sexy you look with your low-cut top. Your value is not on how muscular you look because you got tattoos that make your arms look bigger. Your value is not on the fact that you have pierced places that fit in and make you look cool. You and I get our values from somewhere else. It is the community. We are to embody God's affirmation of ourselves. Values are moral standards which a society holds as praiseworthy. Since modesty has contextual considerations, you and I will be having this conversation every year of our lives. What do I mean by that? I don't know. Because I'm afraid that we even start to imagine what stupid fad's going to come down next. You know, I really do. You know, I see these guys, and now the tank tops are out in summer. Here, these guys are walking around. And I'm seeing guys that are literally tattooed from here to here. They got them here. They got them on their legs. They got them everywhere else. In fact, I just read an article by a doctor, and a doctor literally quit his job at a hospital. Literally quit. He says, you know, he says, "I was all for Obama health care package." This guy is not even a Christian. He's not conservative. He says, "But I was all for the Obama health care package." He says, "But I got evaluating things. I started doing things." And he says this. He says, "People that work," and he says, "the majority of people that I deal with in my emergency room are people that don't have insurance." He says, "But the majority of the ones that don't have insurance have a pack of cigarettes and they have hundreds of dollars worth of tattoos." He said, "They can't afford to take care of themselves. They can't afford to get insurance, but they can afford to." He says, "They come in with McDonald's wrappers." He says, "They come in with fast food. Their car is full of it. They have cigarettes." And he says, "And they have all these tattoos, but they can't afford to do anything else. And yet we have to pay for them." He said, "I am sick and tired of taking care of people who basically live and spend their money on those sort of things while other people are working hard." He says, "I refuse to be a part." And he quit. What would happen if all the doctors had that stand and did that? That'd be pretty good, wouldn't it? And it really is. You know, I've noticed that. Sometimes I get to go to nice places, people that live well on income and whatever else. And I don't see people that live in Indian Hills or nice areas, Wyoming, nice areas. I don't see them. Do you? I don't see them all tatted up. Do you? I don't see them all doing that. It seems to be that the only people that can afford all this hundreds of dollars of tattoos are poor people. That just amazes me. You say, well, how's that? It's a matter of virtues. It's a matter of values. It's a matter of values. See, to them, that's important. When I grew up, and as a kid, the only tattoos you saw was someone in the military. If you wanted to see tattoos and piercing, you had to pull out a National Geographic and turn to the section on Papua New Guinea or some primal pagan tribe in the darkest parts of Africa that have a bone through their nose, because you never saw that. Now I see National Geographic at Northgate Mall. Why would you put a hole in that? I don't know. But we Christians fall in line. We think it's cool to do some of those sort of things. Well, maybe privately we can do some of those sort of things. It's we don't live according to the world. We live according to the Bible. We don't bother. Let me give you something real quick. Like, it's a website. It's called achristianhome.org. Achristianhome.org. This is a family that has children. They're doing their best to raise a Christian home when the mom decided to create a webpage, and it went crazy. Achristianhome.org. If you go down to the bottom of the webpage, she'll have a section on modesty. And when you click on that, you will get a page with links, many, many links, to see what the connections are on modesty. It's a great resource. I wish you would consider looking at them. Let me give you two last points. We're having a problem in our churches, and it's this, and that is our mothers are not training our children to be modest. Don't worry about it. You can go out the way you look. No, you don't go out the way you look. You don't go out that way. You say, I'm just running down the Kroger. It doesn't really matter how you look. No, you represent Christ. You are a woman that God made. He chose to make that way. Honor your Creator, will you? Look like a lady. And so, well, I'm going down, and I don't want to run down. And so you go down in this big old baggy T-shirt and these sweats because you don't feel like doing anything. You know, I understand the inconvenience of it all. But let me ask you something. Could you look more like a lady? Could you? Could you look more like a lady? If you're going to go out back and you're going to be bending over in your garden, please don't dress up. That doesn't make any sense. Am I saying you need to get dressed up to go to Kroger's? No, I'm not saying you have to get dressed up to Kroger's. I am saying whatever you do, you ought to honor God the most you can in what you're doing. And be modest about it. But you're wondering why these girls don't even comb their hair. It's not a value of their mother. Why they can feel comfortable all day long in a society in nothing but baggy, yucky clothes, not even trying to look like a female, not even trying, and I'm picking on females, but we're good to guys too, you know, just being a bum all day long. No, it shouldn't be. It shouldn't be. You know, you used to put on nicer clothes because you were going to town, remember? You put on town. My dad tells me that when he grew up down in Kentucky, a woman would be out back. She'd be in her blue jeans. She'd be working in the garden. She'd have to get up. She'd run into town to get something to go to the store. She would quit working in the garden in time to go in and put on a dress to go to the store so she could get something for her family for supper. That's just the way it used to be. Why would she do that? Was she a staunch Christian? No. Our society had a virtue idea of what girls and women should be. And sad to say, you've been affected by the lowering of that virtue more than what you realize. You have. You agree? Now let me go one step further. Don't bring your kids to church like bums. You say, well, it's Wednesday night, it's Master's Club. It's God's house. It is God's house. Don't you dare do the spiritual injustice to your children of letting them casually approach church. You say, well, you know, it's Wednesday night. They're going to be doing something. Then they don't have to put on their Sunday best, but they shouldn't come in sweatpants and a t-shirt. You know why? Because you are doing your child a spiritual injustice if you make their approach to the house of God no different than going down the street and playing in a pile of dirt. Something about the house of God, something about being associated with God, that means you and I should honestly, why? We step up, we put on our best, we try to do right. I'll be honest with you, this might sound kind of crazy to you, but I'll be honest with you, I, once in a while, when I consider what I'm going to be doing for the day, I'll put on blue jeans, but I'm the pastor of the church, and honestly, I am not comfortable wearing blue jeans here. You will, once in a while, you will catch me. But I stand in front of my closet, and I think about that day. If someone comes to my church that day and says, I'm looking for the pastor, I need to talk to somebody. Are they going to find this guy in a bum and a t-shirt and a blue jeans? Or are they going to find a man that says, hey, I understand my calling. I understand what I am. I'm a man that God made in His image, and I'm going to do my best. I'm not going to wear a suit every day. Thank you very much. I'm not going to wear a suit every day, but I stand every morning and I look at my closet and I say, today I've got an opportunity to live a witness and I need to be appropriate for what I'm doing. This is going to sound like I'm haranguing, but believe it or not, you know, most of you people, you guys, I'm going to tell you something. You don't have to put on shorts to go to the store. And some of you girl ladies, you don't have to put on pants to go to the store. What are you saying? You don't have to. You don't have to. Why are you taking the lowest denominator when you don't have to? You're saying, are you preaching against pants? Are you preaching against short? No, what I'm saying is, why do you automatically take the lowest denominator when you have an opportunity, when the activity doesn't even require it? Now, if you're going to go do something that requires it, please be modest. Why would you take the denominator that is not necessary?
Why did you go in a outfit like that?
Well, because I'm going to do some really heavy shopping. I'm going to dive and for sales and all sorts of things. If that's the way you shop, please wear something modest. But what you need to do, modestly ask yourself, to honor my Creator, what is the most modest, feminine, masculine I can do or be at this time and honor Him? That's the question. If your activity necessitates that, please put it on. If it doesn't, why are you doing that? I'll tell you why you're doing it. Are you ready? I'm going to tell you why. Because you're taking your clues from the world. You're taking your clues from the world. You've decided that what they consider virtue is okay. I walk out in the mall, and I'm embarrassed. I haven't been to Kings Island in years, and it doesn't bother me. One of the main reasons is, since they put in the water park in the summertime, you can't hardly stand in line without some lady almost showing you everything she has. Some of you think I'm being a little crude, but you know it's true. I'm just the only one brave enough to say it. Girl in front of you as she's going up the steps, she hardly has enough material on to even make a handkerchief. It's like, well, what's this about? What's this about? Did you really need to almost wear nothing to ride rides? Is that one of the requirements? Little guy here saying you have to be this tall and you have to have this little clothing on? No, I mean, did you really need to have almost nothing on to be able to do this? What is this? Well, I'm going to go to Kings Island, and I'm going to ride rides today, and I'm going to dress this way. Why? Because everybody else did. It's the clue that you got from everybody else that's there. But I thought you were a Christian. I thought that you were trying to get your ideals of morality and modesty from the virtues of not this society, but from the virtues that come from being a part of His society. So see, modesty isn't just about, remember I gave you, and I am through, modesty isn't just about the outward idea. Well, should I wear this high or that low? No, it's not just about that. It is your inner modesty is a reflection of your inner self and attitude. It really is. I told you I gave you 3 points. Number one, nakedness, right? Nakedness was very concrete. Thigh is nakedness. You don't do these sort of things. It gives us the guidelines. It's pretty clear. The second one, gender distinction. Male should look like male. Female should look like female. Do we have some guidelines? Yeah, we do have some guidelines, don't we? Male and female created he them. Hair, there's your good guidelines. A woman's glory is her hair, and what? It's a shame for a man to have long hair. So there are some distinctions, but there's less. When it comes to modesty, there's really not a lot of guidelines. The Bible doesn't say, all right, be modest, and this is modest. You have to go by the other guidelines, but more than that, you've got to stand in front of your closet every day, and you need to say, Lord, how can I honor you and be modest? You know, because as I said before, you can say, this is a very modest dress, but you can hand it off to another girl, and it's not modest on her. You're going to say, well, I can be modest in this kind of clothes and this kind of activity, but the other girl can't. I can run down there. Well, she can't. Well, why? Well, we're different people. We're different people, and we're different, and I'm not going to do that because my ideal of virtue is not taken from our society, who almost has no virtue anymore. My ideal of virtue is taken from the Word of God. Now, with that said, I hope that when you get up every day, I'm not asking you to put on your Sunday best every morning, but I'm asking you, do you modestly look the way you should for your Savior today? And you need to ask yourself that question. If you're going to err on the side of caution. Should I wear this or should I not wear this? If you're having a hard time deciding, pick the thing that most will honor God. Err on the safe side. Okay? Let's stand.